What I was wondering is, what do you think of the idea that these tapes that we have accumulated over the months be placed in some secure place so that in the event of our deaths, or yours, and if, say, 20 or 30 years from now it's established that this experience is true and did happen, we would then have the tapes so at least we could protect ourselves from being considered 279 eccentrics. You see, 20 or 30 years from now, we'll be 60 or 70, and it's quite possible that some people will look on us as if we were really a bit eccentric. The doctor agreed that the tapes would be preserved, and Barney added with a smile, "But you know, I just can't conceive of playing these tapes for anyone, and I can't help feeling, now that we're almost through, I become quite apprehensive thinking about what might have happened if we had foolishly permitted an unqualified person to hypnotize us, with the emotional impact that did come out, just what damage might have been done." "You went pretty much on the brink of danger," the doctor said. "You can see what your reactions were in this thing. What the emotions of a human being can be when they are unleashed." Betty, with her calmness and all, still had plenty of emotion working through. "This is the unconscious of the human being. And it's an area where the human protects himself by repressions. And he wants to be very careful if we didn't indeed about releasing repression. People think about repression as bad. Actually, repression is an essential of our mental lives. Beings repress a great percentage of our feelings, we would be chaotic human, 6 full months of sessions wherever they are." The Hills, puzzled but relieved, drove back to Portsmouth with the confused vacant feeling that comes at the end of a long, arduous job, a feeling that they would miss the doctor, the sessions, and the search for the solution to a mystery that still remained unsolved. Dr. Simon, in his office some weeks later, opened his mail to find a letter from the organization TH had provided hospital and the medical coverage for the Hills. At the Hills' request, Dr. Simon had submitted a brief summary of the high LLS treatment, indicating that they had suffered severe anxiety reactions after an experience with a UFO. Not surprisingly, the medical director of the organization wrote to Dr. Simon that he found it hard to accept a claim based on the diagnosis of a UFO experience. Dr. Simon replied in part, "I can hardly quarrel with your unwillingness in your letter of August 4 to accept a diagnosis of emotional disturbance created by an experience with an unidentified flying object with respect to the claim of 1/FR. And, too so, Mrs. Hill. This was not made as a diagnosis, but as a statement of the circumstances under which these two people had come to me for treatment and with the expectation that you would send me forms for a medical statement. I have always had such when there have been insurance claims, but Mr. Hill said I must only write to your office, without being able to tell me what information I would have to give you. Mr. and Mrs. Hill were referred to me in December, 1963. During the course of previous treatment of Mr. Hill, it was discovered that this had followed an experience in September, 1961, when Mr. and Mrs. Hill had witnessed an unidentified flying object at night while returning from their vacation. This was a harrowing experience for both of them and led to a very considerable anxiety for some time to come. Mr. Hill began to suffer from insomnia, apprehension and persistent anxiety. Mrs. Hill suffered from repeated nightmares, apprehension and anxiety. More recently, Mr. Hill has had symptoms of duodenal ulcer. Mr. Hill was under treatment for some time before it became apparent, during the treatment, that this experience with the unidentified flying object had played an important part. In fact, the story of this encounter came out during Mr. Hill's treatment. Eventually, there was brought to light the fact that both Mr. and Mrs. Hill were suffering from amnesia for a part of that night's events in September, 1961. Ultimately, both Mr. and Mrs. Hill were referred to me. Hypnosis was the obvious method, and I undertook the treatment of both of them. Treatment involved induction of a deep hypnotic state in each, and for this purpose it was necessary to carry them to the state of somnambulism. Treatment was accompanied by violent emotia-a-la reaction in both patients. Because of this, Treatment had to be delicately controlled and introduction into consciousness only as anxiety permitted. A tape recorder was used to record the unconscious material, and then to assist in its ultimate review and integration into consciousness. During the treatment, Mr. Hill had severe symptoms of ulcer which abated as the treatment progressed. Anxiety abated in both Mr. and Mrs. Hill. On their discharge from treatment, both were considered as recovered. I hope that this information is adequate, and I will be glad to answer any further questions. The insurance claim was settled promptly, probably for the first time involving a UFO case. The therapy was at a safe and practical resting place at which the doctor felt it best to stop, even though many questions were unanswered. The relief from anxiety was significant, and sustained. There could be more discomfort for the Hills in pursuing the experience further than, 281, in letting it remain at the present state. Further, the doctor encouraged the Hills in their desire to keep in contact with him, as they continued working through on their own, a normal, continuing process after formal therapy is concluded. The treatment had begun with the opening up of an amnesia that produced many problems of its own. I began, the doctor commented to the author 2 years after the sessions were over, by utilizing hypnosis to get the story separately from each of the Hills. The major part of the amnesia appeared to encompass an incredible experience on the part of both of the Hills. This was not only significant, but the two people shared both the experiences, and were amnesic for these same experiences. Persistent investigation produced more problems than solutions. I had started with the thought that Barney was somewhat more suggestible than Betty, and that the story had derived from him. The story was quite improbable in the basis of any existing scientific data, but on the other hand it appeared as the case went on that the Hills were not lying, and I felt convinced of that. After getting Betty's story and noting that her dreams were identical to her recall under hypnosis, the idea occurred to me that my original assumption might be wrong, that much of Barney's recall was contained in Betty's description, though little of Betty's recall was included in Barney's story. My assumption then was that Barney had absorbed Betty's dream story. On that basis I went on more intensively to examine this possibility with Barney and to probe Betty's story further. I was ultimately left with the conclusion that the most tenable explanation that the series of dreams experienced by Mrs. H. Hill, as the aftermath of some type of experience with an unidentified flying object or some similar phenomenon, assumed the quality of a fantasied experience. But the whole thing could not be settled in an absolute sense. The case could be safely left as it stood, especially in view of the ear improvement. We would remain in contact, and time might have entered out a more complete picture. Chance to check the impact of Dr. Head of the CGH Tingy Sum 50 YERS after the incident at INDIN Head AND 2 years after the sessions had terminated. Barney went quickly into the trance as usual. Dr. Seaman asked him some 2S2IN a brief follow-up session in the spring of 1966, THE, general review questions, to which he responded objectively and accurately. In the latter part of the session, the doctor reviewed Barney's feelings again, in considerable detail. Doctor, what is your feeling now about the experience? Were you abducted or weren't you? Barney, his voice, as usual, is flat and expressionless. I feel I was abducted. Doctor, were you abducted? Not how do you feel? Were you abducted? Barney, yes. I don't want to believe I was abducted. Doctor, but you are convinced you were? Barney, I say I feel because this makes it comfortable for me to accept something I don't want to accept, that has happened. Doctor, what would make it comfortable? Barney, prayer me to say I feel. Doctor, do you mean it would be worse to say, I actually was abducted? Barney, it is not worse. Doctor, you're more comfortable the other way? Barney, I'm more comfortable the other way. 283, Doctor, why are you uncomfortable about it? Barney, because it is such a weird story. If anyone else told me that this had happened to them, I would not believe them. And I hate, very badly, to be accused of something that I didn't do, when I know I didn't do it. Or if I am not believed about something I did, and I know I have done it. Doctor, well, suppose you had just absorbed Betty's dreams. Barney, I would like that. Doctor, you'd like that. Could that be true? Barney, number doctor, why not? Bar. E, because, he quite suddenly becomes extremely tense and emotional, almost as much as during the first session when he recalled being drawn toward the object in the field at Indian Head. One I didn't like THEMPUTNG their hands on me. Faye's breathing becomes fast and excited. Doctor, all right. Take it easy. You don't have to be upset. Barney begins to sob heavily. I didn't like them putting the IR hands on me. ING me. L, D, auntie like them to UCH, 2C, doctor, all right. All right. They're not touching you now. They're not touching you at all. We'll let that go. You can relax. The doctor begins bringing him back out of the trance, with full reassurance. Barney's sobbing subsides. The review session 2 years after the regular sessions comes to an end. Chapter 13. With the active treatment discontinued, Barney and Betty Hill settle down to their routine life, managing to put the incident at Indian Head into the background and to concentrate on their absorbing interest in community life, the activities of their Universalist Unitarian Church, and civil rights work. Betty Hill's schedule as a social worker for the state of New Hampshire was both demanding and rewarding. Barney's work for the post office department became more smooth and efficient now that he had been transferred to Portsmouth and was no longer working nights. His activities on the board of directors of the United States Civil Rights Commission, the NAACP, and the anti-poverty program kept him inordinately active and occupied in his spare time. The overwhelming sense of relief and unburdening from the sessions strengthened his work, helped him to function better. The experience of both the incident and the therapy, even if in the background, were of course far from forgotten. The Hills discussed these events both with close friends and family, hoping that more information on the elusive subject of UFOs would come to the foreground to illuminate their own experiences and to case the feeling THEMIGHT be regarded as eccentrics. They would correspond at intervals with T.H. Hoffman and Jackson and occasionally visit with Walter Webb at the H. Hayden Planetarium in Boston, or he would visit them in their home. They assiduously avoided any publicity about their experiences. ANDBY confining THEIR discussions on the subject TO their close CIRCLE of 286 friends, they avoided any such problems. They were relieved to discover, in fact, that they could talk about it without any emotional disturbance now, and as long as this was done in private, they found it helpful. They had almost forgotten that back in September 1, 962, they had been invited to tell their experience informally to a UFO study group in Quincy, Massachusetts, some months before they had begun their therapy with Dr. Simon. They had been unaware that at that meeting a tape recording had been made of their talk, which described in detail the experience and Betty's dreams resulting from the sighting. They were also unaware that this discussion later provided the basic information for the reporter who detailed the partial story in the series of articles in the Boston newspaper, appearing in the fall of 1965. Neither the Hills nor Dr. Simon had provided any direct information for this. The Hills were both depressed and frustrated by the articles. They had turned down a request for an interview by the reporter and made it clear to him that they were not interested in putting their experience on public display. Dr. Simon, of course, had refused to discuss the subject with the reporter. On reading the articles, Barney Hill's immediate reaction was that, if he were reading this story about someone else, he would refuse, point blank, to believe it. Both he and Betty felt that a fragmented story like this would do nothing but place them in a position where they looked ridiculous. The story was too complex to be told superficially, there were too many cross currents, too many involved factors that had to be taken into account. The Hills sought legal advice, but discovered that as long as the story was treated as a one-shot newspaper account and was not libelous, they could do nothing unless the story was carried beyond that. When the Universalist Unitarian Church in Dover, New Hampshire, extended an invitation to the Hills to speak at a Sunday evening meeting shortly after the newspaper articles had run, the Hills decided that in the talk they would try to correct the sensationalism of the news story and to convince the public that the articles were not anything to be sought or desired. The Hills would not discuss the hypnosis or therapy at all. Before the meeting, they were dinner guests of Admiral Herbert Knowles, USN retired, one of the leading ex-military officers who was attempting to penetrate the UFO mystery in the face of the confused reports coming from the Pentagon. Here, some of the nervousness there, 287, Hills were experiencing about the idea of the meeting was overcome. One interesting aspect of the Dover meeting was that the co-speaker of the evening was a public information officer of the Pease Air Force Base. Although his talk was noncommittal, he was by no means deprecatory either of the Hills and their story or of the flood of UFO reports that had been building up all through 1965 in that area. The meeting was held on November 8th of that year, and hundreds of people were turned away from the church, in spite of a raw and chilly rain. The turnout for the meeting and the reaction to it indicated to the Hills that the subject of UFOs was of extreme public interest, and possibly of historical importance in the light of increasingly competent reports of sightings throughout the world. The impact on their own lives was profound and far-reaching. While further reflection on their own part brought them to the conclusion that their experience with the abduction might possibly be real, they were acutely aware of how its strangeness could not be accepted by others easily, any more than they themselves could uncritically accept their own stories as revealed to them on the recordings of their therapy sessions. The Hills' ultimate conclusion was, after considerable reflection, that a book should be written that would tell the story in complete detail, leaving it up to the reader to decide on its importance on the basis of the facts revealed. Philosophically, it has given me a broader appreciation of the universe, Barney Hill sums up his feelings. After the incident happened, Betty and I would many times visit the Hayden Planetarium, listening to the lectures. The more we learned, the more fascinating the universe became to us. We bought books on the stars and planets, and our outlook broadened considerably. I became more open-minded about the possibility of life on other planets or in solar systems that might have planets. I tried to speculate on our own experience as to possibilities other than an extraterrestrial craft. One had to reach the conclusion that this theory was as valid as any other. At one time, I gave a great deal of thought to the possibility that this object might have been an advanced foreign reconnaissance craft, but I didn't get too far in my own mind with this. I can't believe that other human beings would be so interested in Betty and me, that they would have conducted the type of physical examination they gave us if they had been human. They could have used their own people for that kind of examination. 28s, while Betty and I don't at all like the idea of being considered eccentric, we still are not too concerned about the opinions of other people about us. If we were outer-directed people, our lives would have been changed a lot more than they now have been. I might be trying to convince people by saying, "Look, believe me, this happened." But I'm not too interested in trying to convince anyone against his own judgment. As far as talking to someone who is interested in listening, I'm glad to do this, and they don't have to agree with me. I realize this case, until further proof comes along, will be controversial, and I accept that. I'm convinced now against my own former beliefs that we had an experience that is going to be extremely difficult to be believed. The only thing I can say is I have a strong feeling that this experience might have happened. You form your own opinion. If you want to believe it, you can. If you don't, that's fine too. But respect the fact that I've given this long thought, in the face of my own resistance to the idea, and I've had to come to the conclusion that there is a distinct likelihood that all this might have happened. I would much prefer it if I could be absolutely sure that none of this took place. But I can't fall back on that, much as I'd like to. I simply say that it cannot be ruled out that this happened, as it came out to me when I heard my own voice on the recordings. The period before the amnesia hit us both is a matter of full reality to me, and to Betty too. But just before the amnesia hit, I felt sure I saw persons of some kind aboard the craft. At that time, Betty did not. I felt this odd form of communication at that time, Betty didn't. This makes it a little difficult for me to accept the transference of Betty's dreams as an explanation, although the problem with this whole story is that any explanation of it seems as difficult as another to accept. When Betty was telling her dreams to Walter Webb or to friends, I resisted the whole idea of her telling them, because they seemed so absurd to me. Now after listening to the recordings, I'm not so sure. When I heard my own voice describing what had happened, it seemed to me, at least, that there was no difference between what I was saying and what might have actually happened. Right or wrong, the whole story seemed to come together, both amnesia and pre-amnesia, as one stream of continuity. One thing I'm sure of is that I don't have that fear, that apprehension anymore that I had after the experience at Indian Head. This was a vague thing, that fear, that I never had in my life before. And, 289, I'm glad that the therapy seemed to relieve me of it completely now. I guess this about adds up my convictions about the story. They are still only my convictions, and anyone is free to disagree with them. The main thing I can say is that they were not arrived at easily, and only after a lot of painful and costly self-examination. I think the most important thing to me, Betty Hill summarizes her feelings, is that I've taken a broader look at the world. Where are we going from here? And to look ahead at the future, you've got to know the past. I've become very interested in anything that has to do with theories or ideas about man's past. We thought man was fairly recent on the Earth, but now we're finding that he's been around quite a few, maybe millions of years more than we thought. I keep wondering about what caused us to suddenly begin so much progress. In the last 40 years, we seem to have broken through more barriers than IT has taken us all through history. We seem to be really just on the threshold of a new science and will move ahead even more rapidly than ever, if man doesn't destroy himself first. I was brought up to believe in what I suppose is called the scientific method. You don't believe in anything unless it can be dissected or put in a box. I don't believe in ghost stories. Before this experience, my attitude was that anybody who believed in anything I don't understand, anyone who seemed too far out, I considered sort of a kook. Now I think I have more tolerance toward new ideas, even if I can't accept them myself. When Dr. Simon first suggested the idea that it could be possible that I had converted the dreams about the amnesia period into a false reality, I thought, well, this is wonderful. I was perfectly willing to go along with it. In fact, I wanted to believe this, because this whole experience isn't easy to live with. I mean, it's really a tremendous pressure on a person. And so after the session in which the dream theory was presented, I came home and I said, this is wonderful. I could compare it with thinking that I had a bad experience, like an auto accident, and then somebody says, forget it, it's only a dream. You know, you're greatly relieved. You see and deny the whole thing ever happened. Through a stage here like that. Every time I think of it, I'd say, it's just a dream, so forget it. I could get rid of the whole thing. This will be the end of it. And so every night when I went to bed, I'd say to myself, it's only a dream. And I was able to do this for about 2 weeks, after, 290, the therapy was over. Then all of a sudden one morning, I woke up with the thought, whom do I think I'm trying to kid? Zoom, it was back again. And I haven't been successful in telling myself it was a dream ever since. Both of the Hills are aware that others will interpret some of the dream content in various ways. This is to be expected, Barney Hill says. And I'm far from an expert. In my case, no dreams were involved in relation to the experience until well after the therapy sessions began. My recall of the incident is not related to dreams or dream symbols. It's related to the strong feeling that what I recalled under hypnosis could be one distinct possibility of having happened. This is a lot more than I could admit for several years. I like to consider myself a realist, and I would be less than one if I tried to interpret what went on in the amnesic period as only being in the nature of dreams or dream symbols. In her studies in sociology and psychology, Betty Hill is well aware of the varied interpretations of dreams, but she points out that even the theorists of dream structure disagree among themselves. That came out under hypnosis were almost identical. What interests me is that the incidents in my dreams and the incidents of the story, I don't feel that in this case the interpretations of dream symbols can help determine whether our experience was real or not, and this is the part of the circumstance that is most important to us now that our anxieties are relieved. If the experience of the hills at Indian Head was a totally isolated incident, it would still be important and worthy of further scientific study, even if only to clarify it. But it is far from isolated. Reliable reports from competent observers of increased UFO sightings, many of them reported as structured crafts similar to the Hills description, have been building up constantly since the early spring of 1965, with police, military, technical and scientific observations prominent among them. The change of attitude toward the subject by scientists from skepticism to one of interested inquiry has been noted from the beginning of 1966 on. It is no longer fashionable to be skeptical. Some scientists have argued that if the phenomenon is purely psychological, then the story should be considered even more startling than if it were an indication of extraterrestrial visitors. At a quiet scientific meeting in June of 1966, Dr. J. Allen Hayek, 291, chairman of the Department of Astronomy of Northeastern University, made a cautious talk to a regional meeting of the Optical Society of America on UFOs that had far-reaching implications as far as the scientific attitude toward the phenomenon was concerned. He lost no time in getting to the core of the speech. "Unidentified flying objects demand serious and immediate scientific attention," he said. "I say this at the start so that you are not misled by the cooks, the nuts, and the gullible who have made this subject so difficult to explore rationally. UFOs are a real puzzle. The myth is not put to rest. And the scientific fraternity must now take cognizance of them. We can no longer dismiss the subject." In addition to his astronomy post, Dr. Hayek was in charge of the optical satellite tracking program of the Smithsonian Astrophysical Observatory in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and scientific director of the U.S. Air Force Balo on astronomy project Stargazer. For 18 years, he has been scientific consultant to the Air Force on UFOs and has screened over 10,000 cases in their files, investigating many of them personally. In the talk to the scientists, engineers and technicians of the Optical Society, he went on to say, "I thought the whole thing would go up in smoke, like eating goldfish or seeing how many people could be jammed into a phone booth. But the phenomenon has stayed with us, and more than that, there are far more persons of status and competence who are reporting these UFOs in extremely articulate form. To those who don't know the background, which you're not likely to get from the press, these conclusions of mine might seem very strange. But given them long thought." Dr. Hayek further revealed that a leading scientist of a top ranking, UNIVE RSIT, had reviewed some of his data on UFOs, and berated him SUNDLY for not coming out boldly with a statement that the objects had to be extraterrestrial. "How can you not accept this as a fact?" the scientist asked HIM. Dr. Hayek reminded his colleague that he was in a lonely position among other scientists. After 18 years as a skeptic, Dr. Hineke said in the speech, "I have finally been hoed down by the sheer weight of competent evidence. As far back as 1995-3, I recommended that the subject be given definite scientific study, but I have never before made a CETGO-RICL proposal. This program will include recommendations for an NIH study in depth by university teams, 2. A pattern analysis by COM 292, PETA of existing data, 3. The establishment of a UFO research center staffed by competent scientists. When a phenomenon has the potential capacity of a possible scientific breakthrough, we are neglecting our responsibilities by not at least exploring every facet. Ridicule is no longer appropriate. In the light of the overall accelerated activity in UFO reports, the experience of Betty and Barney Hill indicates the necessity of further scientific study in an attempt to solve the mystery. There are many unanswered questions precipitated by the case as it unfolded both consciously and under therapy.